Okay, so I was thinking I should have a dramatic beginning. So let me do something over here. All right, should have a dramatic beginning. So the expert in drama, this expert in drama is Homer, father of drama, and he begins the Iliad with rage. He's going to sing about rage. So I said, okay, that's the dramatic beginning. I'm going to talk about rage. And not in the Iliad, but L'Avdil in the Gemara in the beginning of Avodah Zarah. It's a very famous and interesting Gemara. The Gemara says, "Kel zoyim b'chol gaim," that the Ribbono Shel Olam experiences za'am, has a moment of za'am every day. Za'am is rage. How long does that za'am last? So the Gemara says, remember, rega of za'am, for the time that it takes to say a rega, that's a moment. Rega has three letters, the time that it takes to say a word with three letters. Every day, Kadosh Baruch Hu has a moment of za'am. And then it passes. The Gemara says that Bilam, the power of Bilam, Bilam's expertise, was Bilam knew when that moment of rega is happening, and he knew how to exploit it, use that moment of rega to curse whoever he wanted to curse. And his plan was he was going to use that moment of za'am, that moment of kel zoyim b'chal yoyim, and he would use that moment to curse the Bnei Yisrael. That's the Gemara. So what did the Ribbono Shel Olam do? For all those days that Bilam was trying to be Mekalel Bnei Yisrael, the Ribbono Shel Olam withheld his zam, and he didn't have any zam. And that's what Bilam says, how can I can't exploit the zam because there's no zam. The Ribbono Shel Olam is not being zoyim in this time. As it says, and so that's the Gemara. Tosfos asks, what already could Bilam have said? What klala could Bilam have said in that tiny moment of rega kememra, of the time it takes to say one word? What klala could you say in such a short time? The Taisa says that Bilam was going to say kalem. Kalem means destroy them, obliterate them. Like Ribbono Shel Olam said by the Chet Egel, rega echod ve'achalem. So Bilam was going to say kalem, destroy them. Says, so the Ribbono Shel Olam took those letters of kalem that Bilam wanted to say, and he turned it into melech, which is the same letters. And that's why Bilam eventually, the bracha that he said, instead of the klola of kalem, the bracha that Bilam said was utruas melech boy. That's how Tosfos explains the Gemara. Tosfos is addition to the Gemara. So this is a Gemara with the Tosfos that presents very, very many, many questions. First of all, b'chal, what does it even mean to talk about the Ribbono Shel Olam having rage? That the Ribbono Shel Olam has kas, we have many, many psukim that describe the Ribbono Shel Olam having kas. So kas, at least I could understand, because the Rambam, the Meir Nevuchim, explains what does it mean when we say, when we describe the Ribbono Shel Olam as having kas, the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't have emotions the way we have emotions. So the Rambam says that a ruler, a wise ruler, sometimes has to behave in a way that shows anger. Because he has to, if he never shows any anger, then the people won't be afraid of him and they won't abide by his laws. So a king has to have moments when he's charming, but he also has to have moments when he shows kas, at least the behavior of kas. But it has to be controlled by his intellect, controlled by his judgment. And the Rambam says that that's a model for a person. He has to know when to show kas in order to keep the opposite of kas. The same story with Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, that he once had to get angry at somebody who was doing something that needed rebuke. And the Talmidim heard Rabbi Yisrael say to himself, kas haponim v'lo kas halev. Kas on the face, but not kas in my heart. So kas, in regard to Ribbono Shel Olam, the way the Rambam explains it, so that I can understand, is the idea of showing a harshness when harshness is called for. But rage, I would think the rage has the connotation to us that's something that's like unbridled. When you can't control your anger, then we call it rage. You have a road rage person. He's out of control. That's much stronger than kas. What sense does it make? What does Chazal mean? Or the pasuk kel zayim b'chol yoyim, what does it mean when it ascribes to Ribbono Shel Olam an emotion or behavior such as za'am? That's number one. And why only for a moment? And why every day does there have to be a moment of za'am? What's that all about? And then there's this Tosfos, also very cryptic, that the word kalem was converted into melech. So somehow those are two opposites. The opposite of kalem, which is the klala that Bilam wanted to say, the opposite of kalem is the bracha of trues melech bay. Why is that appropriate? And to add, and to tie into Rosh Hashanah, that pasuk of Truas Melech Boy is evocative, of course, of the Truah of the Shofar. And in fact, Targum Unklus, and that pasuk, Truas Melech Boy, that Bilam said, the Targum Unklus says that Truas Melech refers to the Truah of the Shofar that we blow on Rosh Hashanah. So we put the whole package together, what emerges from this Gemara. The Ribbono Shel Olam has a moment of Zaam. We don't understand what that means. Ribbono Shel Olam Zaam. Every day has a moment of Zaam. Bilam knew when that is, he wanted to exploit it. He wanted to say Kalem. The Ribbono Shel Olam withheld his Zaam, and he only showed Rachamim in those days. And the Klola, therefore, of Kalem was converted into the Bracha of Truas Melech Boy, which refers as well to the Tkiya Shofar, the Truah of the Shofar and Rosh Hashanah. So that's the task that I want to set for us, is to gain some kind of insight, some kind of understanding of this Gemara. So let's start at the beginning. The beginning of Ma'aseh Bereishis. The Torah says, Bereishis Bara Elokim, Elokim, we know, is the Shem of Midas Adin. And we know the Rashi says, V'tchila Olah B'machshava, Livrei Yisraelim B'Midas Adin. Ben Yishlom originally planned to create the world with Midas Adin. Ra'a She'en Olam Miskayim, and he saw that the world can't exist that way, won't be able to last. And therefore, Omad Vashitev Imoy Midas Harachamim, he combined with the Midas Adin, the Midah of Racham. So therefore, the world began with Midas Adin. That was the Olam HaMachshava, that was the plan, it should be Midas Adin. And then it became combined with Midas Harachim, otherwise the world couldn't exist. So, of course, the obvious question is, didn't the Rebbeinu Shel Olam know from the beginning that it's not going to be able to miskayim with Midas Adin? What was his plan? To make it be Midas Adin? Didn't the Rebbeinu Shel Olam know that Midas Adin is not going to work? It's going to have to be together with Midas Harachim. So what does Rashi mean? That the Olam HaMachshava, the first Machshava, was to create the world with Midas Adin. And B'chai, I want to talk about Midas Adin and Midas Harachim. You know, a child's understanding of Midas Adin and Midas Rachamim is like it's two different moods. The Ribbono Shel Olam, when he's in one mood, he has a Midas Adin. When he's in an angry mood, he has a Midas Adin. And when the Ribbono Shel Olam is in a more nice mood, so then he has a Midas Rachamim. And needless to say, that's not the pshat. Yeah, Midas Adin and Midas Rachamim are not two different moods. They're two different perspectives, how the Ribbono Shel Olam looks at the world. Midas Adin means that the Ribbono Shel Olam looks at the world, when he's looking at the world, behaving towards the world with Midas Adin, it means the Ribbono Shel Olam is looking at the world from the perspective of what the world is supposed to look like, what the world, that the Ribbono Shel Olam envisioned what the world is created for. The Ribbono Shel Olam created the world for a purpose. There's a certain kind of world that the Ribbono Shel Olam wants there to be, a world in which there's Malchus Shamayim, in which there's Gilui of Malchus Shamayim, which the world is Misukin B'Malchus Shakai, as we say in Aleinu. There's a certain kind of world the Ribbono Shel Olam wants to have, that he created the world to be. And when he looks at the world as it is, from the perspective of the world as it should be, as it ought to be, as the plan is that it should be, and he measures it against that yardstick, and he looks at the world and says, how much is it falling short of the world as it was meant to be, as the world as it's supposed to be. And, obviously it falls short by a considerable degree. And that's Midas Adin. Midas Harachamim is when the Ribbono Shel Olam looks at the world from the perspective, not of what is the world supposed to be like ideally and how short does it fall from that, but rather he looks at the world from the perspective of how much potential does the world have and how much hope is there that the world could improve and become better and develop and evolve towards a better world and ultimately the world that the Ribbono Shel Olam wants. And that's Midasah, that's what we call the Midah of Racham. And it's two different ways of looking at the same situation. We could look at it from the perspective of what should it be ideally. And we look at it from the perspective of how much potential does it have to improve, to develop, and to what can be made from, how can the best be made from the world as it is. I'll tell you a story maybe that will bring out this idea. There was a famous scientist, Niels Bohr. Niels Bohr was from the fathers of modern physics. So in physics, there's an issue, which he was very busy with, which is light particle-wave duality. That means every light, let's say, for example, it behaves, sometimes it seems to behave like a particle. It has behavior that we would imagine a particle would have. We could imagine the light as a stream of particles. And yet there are other things that we, other experiments that we could do, and in which light seems to behave like a wave. And a wave is not a particle, and a particle is not a wave. And this is a very big conundrum in the physics. Like, what is it exactly? What is light and electromagnetic radiation in general? And I think just about everything can be conceived of as a series of particles, or it can be a set of particles, or it could be conceived of as a set of waves. And it's a contradiction. So Bohr was struggling with this contradiction. He came up with something called complementarity theory. And what's this complementarity theory? Complementarity theory means that light, from some perspectives, is a wave, and from other perspectives, it's a particle. And it depends on your perspective, and they're both true, depending on how you look at it. So the story goes that how did he come to this insight of complementarity? That the same thing from both perspectives are right. How did he come to this insight? From a Maaseh Shoya. His son, they came to him once that his son had fallen into bad company and had stolen something from a store. And he was going to have to go in front of the magistrate, in front of the judge. So Dr. Bohr was thinking to himself, he was trying to collect his thoughts and what can he say to the judge and so on. And he starts to think about what the situation looks like from the point of view of the judge. And, you know, the judge's job is that people should be, make sure that people are abide by the law. And if a person does not abide by the law, falls short of what the law is, then he has to be punished because that's necessary for society. Otherwise, it can't just be after. But he, as a father, had a different perspective. He knows his son is a good boy, he comes from good stock. He fell now into bad company, but if he's shown some rachmanus, he could become a very good citizen. He could become a good person. Whereas if they come down hard on him now, then it'll be terrible consequences. And he started to think about the fact that both of these perspectives are true. From the point of view of the magistrate, the magistrate has his perspective. You have to abide by the law, and he's not abiding by the law. But he, as a father, has a different perspective, and he started to say to himself that, you know, both of these perspectives are correct. I can't say that I'm right and the judge is wrong. And I can't say the judge is right and I'm wrong. It depends on where you're sitting. If you're a judge, you see it one way, and if you're a father, you see it another way, and different perspectives. So from that, he had this eureka moment that maybe in physics it's also that way. There's different perspectives, and it also could be both are right. There's complementarity. There's the perspective, the particle perspective, and the wave perspective, and they just complement each other. It depends how you look at it. I think the idea of Midas Hadin and Midas Racham is just such an idea. The Kadosh Baruch Hu can look at the world as a magistrate. You can look at the world as a king. You can look at the world from the perspective of, I have laws. I have a system. The world is supposed to be a certain way, and everything in it is supposed to behave a certain way. And how much are we falling short? And how much is the world falling short? And that's Midas Hadin. But at the same time, the Ibn Shalom is also a father, and the Ibn Shalom knows that we have potential, and that we have our nesiyonos, but we can get beyond our nesiyonos. We can grow from our nesiyonos. It could be sheva yipul tzadik v'kam, and it can look at it therefore from the perspective of what can come of us, and how we can become better, and how we can grow. And we express this exact complementarity, this duality of the Rebbeinu Shlomo's perspective, with the expression that Rabbi Akiva coined, which became so much part of our davening, and part of the refrain of these days of Vinu Malkeinu, in which we address the Rebbeinu Shlomo, and those are not the same thing; they're opposite things. A father is not a king, and a king is not a father. I mean, unless you're the prince, but generally speaking, your king is not your father. Your father is not your king, and the king looks at you very differently than your father looks at you. But the Rebbeinu Shlomo is both, because the Rebbeinu Shlomo combines in himself this complementarity of the perspective of a melech with the perspective of a father, the perspective of Midas Hadin, and the perspective of Midas Rachamim, both of which are true, but which reflect different sides of the situation. The Briyas Ha'olam, Rashi says that the world was created to begin with Midas Hadin. B'tchila Olam B'machshava, the Olam B'machshava of the creation of the world was with Midas Hadin. Why? Because it has to be that way. Because the act of Briya, when the Ibn Shalom created the world, he created the world with a purpose. He created the world because he wanted to have a certain kind of world. The Rebbeinu Shlomo didn't just create the world and say, well, let's see what happens. Let's just wind it up and see how it where it goes. The Rebbeinu Shlomo has a certain purpose that the world is supposed to reach. The Rebbeinu Shlomo has a purpose in creating the world. That's what we say in davening, Sof Maaseh V'Machshava Tchila. When the Rebbeinu Shlomo Rachshava Tchila, when the Rebbeinu Shlomo first envisioned the world, it was the world as it's going to be Basayif, when it will ultimately be L'sakan Olam and so on. So the act of Bria is for the sake of the world as it should be. And therefore, in the logic of Bria itself is the perspective of what's the world supposed to be? What is an ideal world? That's built into the logic of creation. The Rebbeinu Shlomo created the world to be an ideal world. So it's built into the logic of the act of Bria, the perspective of Midas Adin, because the perspective of Midas Adin is to look at the world from the perspective of a perfect world. And how much is this world not like that? That's exactly the perspective of Midas Adin. And that perspective is built into the logic of the Bria itself. So the Olam HaMachshava has to be with Midas Adin. But at the same time, right away, that happens. Complemented with the other perspective, because you know, the purpose, the world is supposed to eventually reach this goal, the Rebbeinu Shlomo has for it, the Seif Maise, which was B'machshava Tchila. But at the same time, the Rebbeinu Shlomo created a world in which there's pure chofshis and there's all kinds of imperfections that have to be overcome. And that's the avoid of our avoid in this world, is to make the world better and to bring the world to its perfection. That's part of the job of Klal Yisrael, is to bring the world towards that state of L'sakan Olam B'malchus Shakai. And therefore, it's also built into the way the world is that it's not going to start at the perfect, at that level. It's not going to start at the end of its development, but it's going to be, you know, it's made in a way in which it can fall, in which there can be setbacks. And from the very beginning, there are setbacks. The Rebbeinu Shlom tells the Adoma that it should be Meitzi Eitz Pri, that it should be Tama Eitz Katama Pri, and the Adoma falls short and doesn't fulfill the command of the Rebbeinu Shlom the way it's supposed to be. Then you have the Reich and the Shemesh and the Reich, and the Reich wants to be bigger. And so then you have that, and then you have the Chet of Adam Rishon, and it just goes downhill from there. So the right away, there are Nephilis, Nebunish, and that's also built into the way the world is. The world is a world in which there can be Nephilis. So Nebunish, in order for the world to continue to exist, he has to also combine the perspective of Midas Racham, in which he looks at the world from the other perspective, the way a father looks at the world and says, yes, right now it's not good. Right now it's Fadobin, maybe a little bit. But there's the potential here for advancement. There's the potential for tshuva. There's the potential for rectifying. There's the potential for growth and learning from our mistakes. So it has to start with Midas Adin, because that's built into the understanding that the world has a purpose. But then together with that, there's the Midas Haracham, which is the tolerance and the patience to allow the world to eventually reach that state that it ultimately has to get to. And those two things together, that's the dialectic of Bris Olam. It starts from the end. It starts from the perspective of what's the goal. You start with the perspective of what's the goal. What is the Rebbeinu Shlomo creating the world to be like? But then he has to be meshatif with that, the Midas Harachamim, and the perspective of we have to help the world to develop, help man to develop and to reach the point where he will fulfill that expectation. Well, the dialectic of creation. From Midas Adin, it goes from Din to Rachamim, from the perspective of Din to the perspective of Rachamim. We have that same dialectic in other areas as well. For example, in chinuch, when we're mechanech a student or a child. So on the one hand, we have to have the perspective of din, which means we have to have the perspective of what are we being mechanech to. We have to have an end in mind. We have to have some kind of picture in our mind. Well, what is the kind of person that we want to create over here? One of the mistakes of modern education is to be mechanech without any end in mind. Just say, well, you know, we'll let the child grow, however, whatever inside the child, let it come out, and not to have any image of what we're being mechanech towards. But all the great mechanechim in our tradition had an image, you know, the great mashkichim in the yeshivas and the musa yeshivas. They had an image of what a yeshiva is supposed to look like, and they were mechanech towards that. Of course, there's individuality as well, but they had a certain demus, and a parent has to have a demus. He has to have an image in his mind. What kind of person does he want his child to grow into? And to be mechanech towards that goal. And that's the perspective of Midas Adin. And is the child advancing towards that goal? If you don't have a goal, then you're being mechanech without any Midas Adin at all. And that's just to have cares. But at the same time, every parent and every teacher knows that you can't only have the perspective of Midas Adin. How far is the child falling short of the goal, of the ideal of where I want the child to get to? You also have to have the perspective of Midas Rachamim, which is the perspective of even when the child falls short, but what potential does the child have? How can I bring out that potential? How can I teach the child to learn from his or her mistakes and to work with the child with the Midas Rachamim, with the perspective of being tolerant of their failings and helping them to move on and to grow and to evolve and to advance? And that's exactly the perspective of Midas Rachamim. And every good parent and every good educator is also being mishatif, the Midas Adin, of the perspective of what his set of expectations. And he has to have those expectations, so he has to have the goal. But he has to be mishatif with it also, the perspective of Midas Rachamim, and how to work with the child and their potential and what's within them, even if the child fails, but to work with the child, how can we get past the failure and move forward? You have the same thing in society. You know, a person could look at society from the point of view of all the things that are wrong with society. You have a picture of what a perfect world should look like, a utopian society, a society of justice and equity. And say, look at the world and say, the world is terrible. It's deciding which there's inequality and there's injustice and there's exploitation and there's so much that's wrong with the world. And if that's your only, that's a perspective of Midas Adin. And if that's your whole perspective of Midas Adin, you can just give up and wash your hands of the world. Just be a pessimist and say the world is hopeless. Or you could have the opposite extreme. You can have the perspective of, you know, a Panglossian perspective. That everything's great. This is the best of all possible. We live in the best of, you know, the world is the best of all possible worlds. Nothing is wrong with the world. Everything's perfect. And then you also don't try to change anything because everything's perfect. Why should you change? Well, you know, also doesn't go anywhere. But really to for society to better itself and to improve and to advance, you have to have a combination of the perspective of Din, a perspective of some kind of ideal of what society should look like and where it falls short, together with the optimism and the Midas HaRachamim to say, well, of course society falls short, but we can improve. People are improvable. Society is improvable, and we can try to reform and make it better little by little and slowly so that society tomorrow will be better than it is today. Rosh Hashanah is also a day of Bria. Rosh Hashanah is the anniversary when the Rebbeinu Shem created the world. We say, Davening Hayoyim Haras Elom. And every year, Sfarim tell us, the Rebbeinu Shem creates the world anew. And because every year the Rebbeinu Shem creates the world on Rosh Hashanah again, so every world, every Rosh Hashanah, we go through the same dialectic that it starts with Midas Adin, and from Midas Adin it goes to Midas Rachamim. Rosh Hashanah, the Rebbeinu Shem is creating the world. So he wants the world to be a certain way, and he measures the world. How is the world measuring up? And every single human being, as the Mishnah says, from the fund of Kibnei Mara, and every human being files past the Rebbeinu Shalom and is judged. How far are they? How close are they approaching the purpose for which the Rebbeinu Shalom created them? And to what extent? How much are they falling short? And that's Midas Adin. And that Midas Adin is part of creation, because if the Rebbeinu Shalom is creating the world, then he's creating the world for that purpose, and everybody has to be judged by that yardstick. But then from the Midas Adin, we also, the Rebbeinu Shem goes to Midas HaRachamim. And Chazal say that Rosh Hashanah, Rebbeinu Shem goes from the Kisei Adin and he goes over to the Kisei HaRachamim. Just as in the first Bias Olam, just in the first Rosh Hashanah, where the Rebbeinu Shem created the world, B'tchila Olam Machshava, the Bria begins with Midas Adin. There has to be a purpose and a goal and a yardstick. But at the same time, the Rebbeinu Shem then sees, Sheinu Miskayim, can't only look at the world from the point of view of Din. And he combines this complementarity principle, the Midas Adin together with the Midas HaRachamim, and that repeats itself every single Rosh Hashanah, where the Rebbeinu Shem goes from the Midas Adin over to the Midas HaRachamim. And Chazal say that when in Rosh Hashanah does the Rebbeinu Shem Kiviyochel shift his perspective from Midas Adin to Midas HaRachamim? Does he go from the Kisei Adin to the Kisei HaRachamim? When we blow shofar. Shofar, Rebbeinu Shem hears the call shofar, and he's oimid mikisei din and he's yeshiv on kisei rachamim. What's the power of shofar to shift, as it were, the Rebbeinu Shem's perspective from the perspective of din to the perspective of rachamim? Because it says in Sfarim that the call shofar expresses the reusa delibo, the deep ritzrotzen that's in our heart to be a better Jew. The person has many ritzonis, many desires, many impulses. People are complicated. And some of them are more superficial. They're just, they're in the moment. And then there are some that are deep and really express what we really are. And the Rambam writes in Hilchos Gerushin that the deepest desire of every Jew is to do all the mitzvahs and not to do any averus and to be an Eved Hashem. That's our deepest desire. Of course, that gets covered over by all kinds of other impulses and other desires. And we can even forget about that deep roots. Like the Gemara says in Brochus, that Rabbi Alexandri, after Shemona Esrei every day, he would say a special Yerotzen. He would say, Neinu lasus Yerotzenecha. What we really want is to do Yerotzen Hashem. Mima Akiv, what stops us? Umas Olam, Visarosha Be'isam, the Yetzirah. The Yetzirah gets the better of us. Society gets the better of us. We learn things from the street that make us forget what we really want to do. But that deep Yerotzen that we forget about the whole year sometimes, and Rosh Hashanah, the Kol Shofar arouses it, the Kol Shofar expresses it. And it comes from this deep rotzen of the heart. And therefore, that rotzen, that we have to be better, that is the potential that we all have to become better and to improve and to move forward. Because if that can be harnessed, if we can connect with that, then we can improve and we can change. And that is what allows the Midas HaRachamim. The Midas HaDin says, we all fall short. We're all broken. We're all imperfect. That's the Midas HaDin. And the day starts with the Midas HaDin. The Baruch Hu says, what's going on? I made a world. This is not what it's supposed to look like. This is not what we're supposed to look like. So that's Midas HaDin. But then we blow shofar and we express the fact that we also are not happy with ourselves. We also want to look different. We share that. And if you help us and you give us erech apayim, you give us a chance, and you allow us to improve ourselves, then we can move forward and be more like what you want. And that is the perspective of Midas HaRachamim, the perspective of a father who sees that potential in his child. And therefore, it's the kol shofar that allows the transition, the shift of perspective from the perspective of Midas HaDin to the perspective of Midas HaRachamim. And that's every Rosh Hashanah. Because every Rosh Hashanah is a day of Bria. The truth is, though, that not only is Rosh Hashanah a day of Bria, but every single day is in a certain way a day of Bria. Because we say in Davening, I'm a Chadish b'chol yoyim ma'aseh b'reishis. The Rebbeinu Shel Olam renews creation every day in Rosh Hashanah in a special way. And so I'm discussing, if the Rebbeinu Shel Olam renews the world every day, so what's so different about Rosh Hashanah? That's a separate topic. But there is a certain aspect of renewal that happens every single day. And therefore, every single day, also, there has to be this dialectic of Bria. That Bria always starts with Midas HaDin, because the Rebbeinu Shel Olam has a purpose in the Bria, and the Bria therefore creates a yardstick. The Bria is for a purpose. That purpose creates a yardstick by which the Rebbeinu Shel Olam measures the world and against which the world always falls short, and we always fall short. So every act of Bria creates a Midas HaDin, has within it the perspective of Midas HaDin. But every day, there's also the Rebbeinu Shel Olam sees that in Olam is Kayim, and he has to be Meshat with Midas HaRachamim. So there has to also be Midas HaRachamim. But every day, there has to be a moment of pure Midas HaDin. And that's, I would suggest, that's Pshat in the Gemara, that Kel Zoyim B'chol Yom, that every day there's a moment, one moment, Kerega, there's one moment of Midas HaDin. It can't be two moments, because if there'll be two moments, it's Ein Olam Miskayim, because then there's the Din, and we're wanting, and then the next moment, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam destroys. So it can't be two regas consecutive. But there's one rega of Kel Zoyim B'chol Yom, there's one rega of Din. Rebbeinu Shel Olam looks at the world from that perspective of Gumahal, you know, against the perfect yardstick of Din. And then comes the Midas HaRachamim. And that's described as Zam, not merely as Kas, but as Zam, as rage. So why rage? Why isn't just Kas enough? So I thought like this, where does rage come from? Rage comes from, by people, by us. We feel rage, a person feels rage when they feel that the world is different than, is off, is wrong. A person feels that the world is wrong. It's not the world that's the way it should be, and he's stuck in this world. So he feels rage. He rages against the world. We have revolutionaries. They revolutionaries are filled with rage because they look at the world and they have this picture of what the world's supposed to be like. Maybe the picture is crazy, but they have some picture of what the world is supposed to be like, and they look at the world and it's not what the world is. And the world always falls short. Now we see this around us all the time. People who are full of rage, they're raging against the world. Why? Because they have this picture of what the world is supposed to be like. And the world isn't, then you can't change the world. And so they're filled with rage. And they want to break everything down. They want to destroy everything because they're just dissatisfied with the world. It's not like one thing went wrong. Or you have people feel rage when in their lives there's some important aspect of their life that's not the way they envisioned it would be. And can't fix that. And they feel rage. They're raging against the situation that the world is off. That's called rage, and that's Zam. So I think that's the word that Chazal used when they describe this moment when the Rebbeinu Shel Olam looks at the world and the world is off. The world is a world in which there's resha, in which there's evil, in which there's this chatoim, in which the Rebbeinu Shel Olam kavod shamayim is forgotten. And it's so different from the world that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam wants, in which the world that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam created the world for the sake of being. And that dissonance we describe, different Torah Kolosha Medeodim, but we describe that as a moment of Zam. It's that moment in which the Rebbeinu Shel Olam rages, kibiyochel, against the fact that the world as it is so totally different than the world as it is supposed to be. And that's the perspective of Din, and that moment is the moment of Zam. But right away, that moment of Zam passes, and then the Rebbeinu Shel Olam looks at the world with its failings, And the Ribbono Shel Olam has the perspective of an Avraham Rachman and the perspective of, you know, we can give the world a chance, the world can improve, Chal Yisrael can improve, we can all improve, and so on. And we have the Midas Rachman that allows the world to be able to move forward. But Bilam knew how to exploit that moment. Bilam knew when that moment is happening. And at that moment of din, of zam, Bilam would then express a klala. And the klala that he wanted to say, Taisa says, is kalem. Kalem. Where did Taisa get that from? Taisa has found a three letter word. It's very strange, Taisa, right? Taisa, yes. What could he say already in the time that it takes to say rega? Rega is three letters. What could he take in the time that it takes to say three letters? If Taisa came up with the word, it's like one of these, riddles. What three letter curse word do you know? Four letter curse words is plenty, but what three letter curse word can you think of? So Taisus came up with the curse word kalem, kaleisam. Things, but the pshat is different about it. The pshat is Taisus had a pasuk in mind at the time of the chet ha'egel, which was the worst chet that we ever did. At the time of the chet ha'egel, what did the Ibn Rushdie say to Moshe Rabbeinu? Rega echod v'achalem. In one rega, I'll destroy them. What klola could Bilam say in the time that it takes to say a rega? That klola that they banished him, those terrible words, that terrible word that they banished him said that he could do in a rega. Rega echad v'achale. So in that rega of kikel zayim v'chalim, the rega kememra, in that rega, what Bilam was going to say was just that kalem. Be mechal, just like you said about the chadegel, rega echad v'achalim. In my rega, in this rega of zam that happens every day, so what did Ben Shalom do? He said, no, he's not going to be Zayman. When Bilam wants to exploit, there has to be a reg of Zam, because that's how the world doesn't forget. The Ben Shalom keeps measuring the world against that yardstick of din. He has to measure the world against that yardstick of din, because there has to be a goal, there has to be a tachlis, there has to be a purpose. So there has to be a reg of din. But Bilam, you want to exploit that to destroy Klal Yisrael. So those days that you're trying to exploit it, there was no reg of din. And there was only Rachamim. And the word Kalayim was converted into Melech. And that's the bracha of Truas Melech Bay. And Truas Melech Bay, Unkla says, is the Shofar. What does the Shofar have to do with anything? The Shofar somehow has this power to take the Chaleim, which with Bilam was going to exploit the Reg of Din, and to turn it into a bracha of Melech, of Kabbalah's Malchus. And that's the Shofar. And that's exactly the Shofar. Because the Shofar was what every Rosh Hashanah converts the Midas Adin into the Midas Arachamim. Converts, shifts the Ribbono Shel Olam's perspective, Kiviyachol, from the perspective of Din and how far we're falling short, to the perspective of Rachamim and how that we still have potential. That's from the fact that we have these deeper tzaynis, that we want to be better, we have the potential to advance. And it's the Shofar that converts the Midas Arachamim to the Midas Adin, which is exactly the converting of Kaleim, Rega Echad V'Chaleim, to Truas Melech Bay, to the bracha that the Ribbono Shel Olam has, that Klal Yisrael can be Abdei Hashem, we can be Mamluch Ribbono Shel Olam, we want to be Mamluch Ribbono Shel Olam, and that itself allows the perspective of Midas Rachamim. And that's really the Avodah Rosh Hashanah. The Avodah Rosh Hashanah is for us to connect with that Rotzen that we have in ourselves, that deep Rotzen, the deepest Rotzen that we have in ourselves, that we want to be better, we want to be better people, we want to be more like the Ribbono Shel Olam wants us to be. And later on, we'll apply that. We have a Seres Yemei Teshuva to apply that and think what that means in practice. But Rosh Hashanah, the Avodah Rosh Hashanah, is to connect to that Ru'usa Taliba, to that deep Rotzen. That's expressed by the Shofar. If we have a Rotzen to be better, then it's shayach to move on and to talk about how to do it. And then we can have the Aseres Yemei Teshuva. But if we don't have even the Rotzen, we don't even have the desire, the ambition to be better than we are, then nothing will happen. I'll tell you a mashal. I said many times that a rav in a shul can never make the balabatim do something they don't want to do. If there's something they want to do but they need a reminder, so that the rav can play a role. So there the rav can play a role. So mashal, if you have a shul where they want to talk in shul, that's it. They want to talk in shul. They have no interest in not talking during davening. So the rav can talk till he's blue in the face. Not going to make a difference. They have a tzibah that really wants to have a davening with the korum, but they need to be reminded. They need to be reminded sometimes. They need to, so that there the rav can be instrumental. But the same thing about ourselves. If we have a rotzen that we really want to be better, we want to be more elof, we want to be more involved, we want to learn more, we want to do more chesed, if we have that rotzen, we want to be more like something else, then the work of Aseres Yemei Teshuva is possible. But if we don't have that rotzen to begin with, then it's a bracha l'batala, and it can't go further. So that's our, that's the avodah of Rosh Hashanah. One way to do that is perhaps to think about role models, to think about, you know, we have a vision of, how do we get a vision of what we would like to be? Who would, people who we admired ourselves, parents, grandparents, teachers, people who we thought were admirable in their conduct, in their elachait, in various ways. And if we have that, if you remember that, Yosef HaTzadik, you remember the class deponent of Yaakov Avinu. If we remind ourselves of that, that's a way to remind us of, well, who, what do we really want to be like? You know, we want to be like them. Rosh Hashanah, we remind ourselves of that. And from there, we're able to go on and to work on coming closer to that. And by focusing on that, and that takes some contemplation, but by thinking about that on Rosh Hashanah, we allow the Ribbono Shel Olam to move from Midas Hadin to Midas Rachamim, and from the perspective of the magistrate to the perspective of the father, to who sees in us not how far behind we are, but how much capacity we have to move forward. So I wish all of you a k'sivah k'sima toiva, l'shana toiva tikosevu v'sechesemu l'alter l'chayim toiva l'shon, and have a good kibbutz yar. There's going to be another shiur, the same time slot, next week, pre-Yom Kippur. It's going to be a different kind of shiur. This is a machshava shiur. That's going to be more of a lamdash shiur. Also a nice shiur in its way, but it's different, flavor. So, but anyway, I hope that this was helpful. Cult of...